Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people.
This would be The Media Project, the editor, the publisher, and the professor here today.
Hey, we got to hurry up here because I understand that Rex Smith, the editor,
yes,
has big brass coming from the Hearst.
Oh, yeah, corporate brass.
We've really got to hurry up.
I don't think it will help if we talk any faster because there's a certain amount of time here that we have to fill.
Well, I have an announcement to make.
Ira Fussfeld,
yes, publisher
of the
year. I pre-recorded all of my comments today, so everything you hear me say will be lip-synced.
By the way, if anything, Ira Fussfeld should show us how stupid the press is. That is number one on my list. I mean, so what? This beautiful woman comes up there. It's 10 below, above zero or whatever, 20 above zero, and she lip syncs. So what? You would think that somebody had put a nuclear bomb over somebody's territory. It was crazy. Even the New York Times did it. I couldn't believe it.
Well, excuse me, but National Public Radio did it here on your airwaves.
I'm very ashamed of them.
Oh, come
well,
now.
If you went, save it. If you spent your... Now, they didn't cost anybody to watch this particular performance, but if you had spent your hard-earned money to see a Beyoncé concert, would you be upset if she lip-synced her way through
this
it?
This was not that, by the way.
You expect a live performance.
But,
by the way, your friend Yo-Yo Ma apparently
did the same thing.
He cello synced.
Yeah, you are so pompous, and I love you, Ira, but you are a pompous man. What would you expect? I mean, you're so blown up over this. This is crazy. It's an inauguration, so they did that. I'm a big fan, and of course, JT, my hero.
Did not lip sync, actually stood up there in the cold and managed, as the same thing for Kelly Clarkson. And
she looked like she was really having fun.
It's difficult. By the way, the national anthem is the hardest thing for a performer to sing. I mean, it has an amazing range, and, you know, you worry that something's going to go wrong, that you're going to forget the words, as Robert Goulet famously did, before a huge live audience. But the fact is, I think that the people expect, especially at the inauguration of a president, an authentic performance.
You guys make me sick.
I will give you now. She has not, as we record this, she has not admitted that she lip synced. But I will say this: if she did, it was a remarkable performance.
Yes, it was.
You guys remember the old days of the American Bandstand show, and they bring these people on, and they would have to lip sync their records.
Sure.
That was horrible. Their lips were not matching the song lyrics. If she was lip syncing, you couldn't tell.
She was very good.
But this proves something to me.
Yes.
It proves that when the situation is too complex, how much is in the New York state budget and what it's mandate relief and stuff like that, everybody yawns. But if you go on our Vox Pop program and you bring up, this business of lip syncing, every phone will ring, intellectual place, because it's easy to get your hands around.
Well, of course. And so what do you say? So why in the world do you mention such easy stuff? This is like the old ice cream and spinach debate that we had last week. You know, let's not get so haughty about things. I mean, you're the...
Haughty? Who's the haughty one?
Well,
you're the haughty one.
No, you
and
are.
And he's the haughty one.
I tell you.
It's a word you don't hear very much anymore. anymore, by the
haughty,
way.
Yes,
I love the word haughty.
Folks can't spell it.
If I hadn't admitted that I'm lip-syncing now, this wouldn't have come up.
I know.
It was the perfect entree.
But actually, what I loved was the New York Post, because the New York Post, which so hates Barack Obama and so wears it on its lapel, that the coverage of the inauguration, the Wood, as it's called, the front page headline of the New York Post, on the day covering the inauguration was Beyonce and what's her husband's name?
Jay-Z.
And it said the first couple, and there was a picture of these two guys. Nothing about Obama on the front page. It was these two. And then the next day, of course, they had to reverse and do something negative about Beyonce because they discovered
she was. And because they thought that would be attached to Obama.
Absolutely. It's all about selling the New York POST.
Yeah, so, awful. Awful.
There you go. But we got carried away here.
Terrible.
We get carried away. But of course, it's
awful.
Maybe. You know, a big deal is made of these national events like inaugurations. And it is interesting that in such a time as this, the viewership of certain channels goes up and others do not. CNN won the cable channel ratings wars for the inauguration, unlike the usual when
Now, that was the good
Fox
news
there.
For CNN. The bad news for CNN is they had much bigger numbers in the first inauguration.
Well, yes, absolutely true. More people watched the first, as more people showed up
at
the first
CNN
inauguration.
Is the go-to place when something important is happening. Now, it's interesting, and I watched all of them, you know, a little bit. I thought Rachel Maddow didn't do the same kind of good work that CNN was doing. I thought CNN was right down the middle.
Well, two things. One, CNN won the ratings battle, and who was third in the ratings battle?
Fox.
And why?
I know why.
Because Fox audience doesn't want to watch it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. That's stinking network.
And the other thing is that the inauguration coverage once again proved that no matter what network you were watching, the place to go was C-SPAN, where all you could do was just watch it, because you would watch these various other channels, particularly when the introductions of the dignitaries were going on, and the broadcasters felt compelled to talk over it. I don't want to hear them chatting about that. I want to watch the event. I want to be part of the event. I think I might be in the minority. I'm sure I am, because not as many people watch it on C-SPAN. But when you want to watch an event unencumbered by commentary from either side, turn on C-SPAN.
By the way, that's exactly what I ended up doing, no question. I saw it fascinating. I think one of the channels, I don't remember which one it was. What they were doing was they were playing their ads. But they had a box that showed the ongoing parade at the same time, so that they wanted it both ways. They clearly had to get the advertising money. I understand that. Otherwise, they'd have to file what's called a discrep report, and they don't want to do that. But at the same time, they were showing you the parade.
Well, the other thing was NBC, during the parade, made a big deal of the fact that Al Roker, their weather guy from the Today Show, on this. Oh, yes, you're not a fan of his. He was attempting, with success, to get the attention of both Biden and Obama as they walked by.
Well, they're not stupid, you know. I mean, he's got NBC.
They showed this clip endlessly on the NBC program.
Like it
was just all about them. And just turn on C-SPAN.
Yeah, and also
and
I
read
thought
about it in
was
the
playing the clown, and I think it was a fairly dignified time. So, but that's all right. I mean, clearly they consider him one of their major stars. They keep pushing him and pushing him and pushing him, and so I don't watch.
Well, of course, so much of commercial television of any sort has to be entertainment oriented. That is, they have to have clowns.
Yeah, but you have to be entertained.
Well, it also
he doesn't entertain me,
right?
It also has to be personality oriented, because it essentially the news and the coverage is the same on all the channels. So what sets it apart are the people who are bringing it to you. And if you like Brian Williams, you'll watch that. If you want Scott Pelley, you'll watch that. So they have to play up their personality.
It's what we call the Q.
The Q.
You know, they go around and they test whether people like you or not.
Wasn't Q from the James Bond movie?
Ah, that Q. Yeah,
that was hardly
there
worthy
we
of
go.
You.
There no, we go.
That wasn't good. Make
old guys
leave
here.
The jokes to me.
This group of old guys here really ought to be reading newspapers, because it turns out that 68%, there's new research showing 68% of people who said they read a print newspaper yesterday are over age 45. So what this shows is if you're stuck with a print product, you are
over 45.
Over 45, which I don't consider old, by the way, of course.
Are you over 45, Rex?
Barely. Mm-hmm. But if you count the digital side of things, the over 45 crowd for newspaper reading is 58%. So clearly there is a younger readership of the website of things and an older readership with the print side of things, and perhaps younger still with the cable network side of things, or younger still no news consumption at all.
Well, what's the name, Rex, of The Princess Bride.
Wonderful movie.
Yeah, right.
Peter Falk reading to his granddaughter and all
Do
of that.
Do you remember the most important line in The Princess Bride?
Maybe not.
Liar! 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 And the reason I say that is, you say to somebody, do you ever read a newspaper? And they're going to say, no, I don't read a newspaper. Of course they're going to say, yes, I read a newspaper, which is why
because newspaper readers are smarter people, and they want to be identified
right,
as that crowd.
Right, right, which is why even that lower number for the younger people, I think, stinks like a fish. Which reminds me, what is a newspaper good for? Wrapping up a fish.
So you tell me again, you think more people are saying they are reading than are reading?
Yes. No, I think more people are saying it in the lower age group because they don't want to be seen as stupid. I mean, if I walk into my political science class and I say to them, how many of you read a newspaper on a semi-regular basis? Their hands are going to go up. They're not going to say, this guy's going to think I'm stupid if I don't say that.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
You actually agree with this, Max? I thought it was sort of a challenge to you.
I think that actually we have other ways, though, of determining readership, and especially if you use the digital side of things, you get a more scientific sample. It's not
digital's
just,
easy.
Did you read?
Digital's easy, but how do you prove? I mean, you guys have all these self-serving things like, I know Playboy does. I forget what it was.
Playboy.
Yeah, Playboy says, you know.
You do have to be really old to read Playboy,
yeah,
Alan.
Well, I'm still in business, right? I don't read it, but except if I'm in the barbershop. Except my question to you is this.
Yes.
They say things like 9 people or 5 people or 4 people read every edition. I don't believe that.
Huh, really? Yeah, we have passed along about 2.3 is our
Where do you get
number.
That stuff from?
Research. I mean, I'm not a scientist, but I pretend to be one here on this show.
I refer you to the Princess Bride.
Liar!
Well, we know younger people, because of this research, are in fact reading the digital editions and who are not reading the print edition.
No,
and therein
easy,
lies
yeah.
the problem for the industry, because the digital editions are not fully supporting the operation. And if they're not printing the print edition, then they're hurting the print edition. And at some point in time, we're not going to have the money to pay for a digital edition.
Well, let me give you an example of that for radio, which is, you know.
And by the way, why is our research any more accurate than the Nielsen or the Arbitron?
Well,
people?
That's what I was just about.
Okay. Yeah. So
I have a friend. Who
I
used
say
to
you
speak
have no, virtually nobody listening to this show at this point.
I have a friend named Michael who used to speak to me. He's a professor. And there was always a sort of condescending, icicle-like condescension to his voice. And he would say, well, and that's what you reminded me of, you know, a second before. But let me just say, you're absolutely right, Ira. And I'll tell you why. Because now they're doing people meters as opposed to the books that they used to give out to measure audience, right? Well, the books were very easy for people to fudge. They would say, well, I like NPR, so I'll just put it in NPR.
Yes, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, when they went from one to the other, we see a tremendous difference in the number of people who are listening at any given time.
But and I ask this question seriously because I've never quite figured it out. Even with the people meters, they are not 300 million people meters.
No, now you have to do percentages.
Right. So
just like you do with polling.
But the newspaper circulation and readership is based on actual numbers. We know how many copies are going out of the store and where those copies are. The research is based on more scientific data when you talk to people and say, did you buy the paper? How old are you? Et cetera.
So yeah, but when Rex tells us that 2.3 people read every newspaper, is that true?
Well, that's an industry standard that has been established over
Well, it's a self-serving
time.
Standard, if I do say so.
I think that the research is done by independent people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anybody who signs that paycheck is going to get what they want.
That's not the case. Actually, the Audit Bureau of Circulation is jointly run by the newspapers and by the people who pay the newspapers for advertising.
Right.
And so it is not in their interest to have the numbers inflated.
That's correct.
Are the people who have to pay more if there's higher readership.
Yeah.
So it's in their interest to actually see the numbers depressed. And that's why the Audit Bureau of Circulation is dependable material.
Well, Dr. Chartier.
Well,
it sounds very official. It just sounds wrong to me.
Well,
I want to say that.
But why would an advertising...
The premise is wrong.
But if the advertising industry is saying, we trust these numbers, and that's an important number for them because it...
Because you're all in the same stinking game together. That's why.
It's a difference.
And you're not. It's all pure here at public radio that nobody listens to.
Much purer than that
other
stuff.
And you're just dismissing science. You're a PhD. You should have respect for research, you know, instead of just dismissing it because you don't like the sound of
if
it.
If I have a PhD, which you are impugning right now.
Well, I'm impugning perhaps
and by
your
the way,
application.
I was just
of
asked
it.
To give the commencement address at Western New England University. I want you to know how prestigious that is.
Well,
but
I'm sure it is.
I have to go find a hat because the last time I did one of these, I lost my hat.
And you should tell them how little respect you have for scientific research.
Well,
therefore,
thanks for getting me back on the point.
I'm glad to help.
But yes, that's true. That I have tremendous respect for scientific research, but not phony research.
Well, you're going to have to explain to me why the advertising people would underscore phony research when it costs them millions of dollars if the numbers are more in our favor.
Because they take what they can get, because it's all a closed game. Because they have to go to...
Because you don't know anything you're talking about. Let's go to the next topic.
But they have to go to their clients,
okay.
You see? And they have to say to the clients, look at how well we're doing. That's why.
No, you have to stop pounding on the table. It's making people get a headache.
They'll say to the clients, if the numbers are not strong enough, don't advertise or don't advertise as much in newspapers. So the newspaper advertising is worth their while. Otherwise, they're going to get their money. They're just going to steer people to a different direction.
So, yeah, well, they haven't done that yet with digital, I can tell you that much.
No, not yet.
So, actually, there is a hugely growing audience, of course, for social media.
Yes.
Facebook, Twitter, you know, we haven't yet figured out how to monetize that, as the word says.
It's so interesting.
It is going big.
You know, I wrote a column about how James Taylor ought to run for Senate in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
Got a little bit of play.
Mm-hmm.
And then James Taylor was very kind, interviewed, and saying that he wasn't going to do it, but he was very grateful. To who? Me. For having said this, it was very generous of me, he said. Somebody took that and tweeted it.
Uh-huh.
And it became massive.
Uh-huh.
In other words, nobody would have seen it if it was just in the Berkshire Eagle or wherever he said it. But
right.
The tweet thing just magnified it like
crazy. The tweet thing does. And one of the difficulties is that we ask our employees to be active in social
media. Tweeting. Yeah, yeah.
But we do ask them to pay attention to the fact that they are really, for 24 hours a day, they're an employee of the Times Union.
Without question.
You know? And so what they write there reflects on the company. Now, a series of rulings and advisories from the NLRB and so on says that workers
National Labor Relations Board.
Can discuss work conditions freely without fear of retribution. They can say, you know, my editor is a jerk.
Freedom of speech.
And all that kind of thing. And
how do you feel about it as the editor?
A difficult thing. Well, I want to get a little bit further understanding of this because it seems to me that if we have, let's say that a reporter makes a negative comment about somebody he's covering.
You don't have to tell me.
It's not a good thing.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. And I think the NLRB is probably wrong on this.
Well, they're trying to analogize it to being that the social media world is like the water cooler. And so employees have historically hung around the water cooler.
No, but I think Rex makes a very good point. You're the editor of the paper. You have professional standards on the paper. Somebody's your employee, and they say something that is going to bring disrespect to your newspaper. I think he's right.
Yes, I agree.
But now here's an interesting situation. A reporter at the Arizona Daily Star was frustrated one night by the lack of news. And so he posted some Twitter comments. One of them said, "What? No overnight homicide? You're slacking, Tucson." And another one began, "You stay homicidal, Tucson." Well, so the newspaper fired this guy. Thought that was in bad taste, you know, to ask for a homicide.
Sure.
The NLRB found the dismissal was legal, in fact. He said the post, the NLRB said the posts were offensive, not concerted activity, and not about working conditions. So there is some grounds, apparently. I think that this will have to be sorted out by the lawyers before we can figure out many cases.
And as you know, Rex, very well, because you're one of the smartest guys I know, and that is, why do you laugh?
Sorry.
It's true.
When you're not being haughty and condescending.
And have icicles dripping off your words. You make a lot of sense here. Well, go ahead, whatever.
That's great.
Whatever I was thinking, I don't remember.
That's great. Hey, there's something happening this week that is significant to note for we old print people, and that is going on out in Columbus, Ohio. That is a new compact newspaper, a sort of which we have not seen really in this country.
What is that? I read about that.
They're taking an existing old press, like the size of press that Ira's paper and my paper is published on, and they're changing it so that the cylinder that the plates sit on prints three pages at a time rather than two. So they call it a three around. And what they're doing is they're cutting off the paper shorter so that it's only 14 and 3 inches. Yeah. So it's 14 and 3 inches long.
Yeah.
So it's a short paper with multiple sections. It's kind of like a tabloid, but it's not all printed in one section. It's multiple
sections.
Well,
it's so interesting because I have noticed the number of newspapers, and I don't want to take a chance and name them here, which are now getting thinner, getting smaller. So if you take a look, for example, I think it's the Post and the Daily News in New York. One of them is longer and thinner than the other one. What's that about?
Well, most papers have narrowed their web width, which is what it's called, web, W-E-B, and they've done that to save money. You could cut a half an inch of white space from the gutter, the space between the two pages, and if you do that you can save an incredible amount of money depending on how many papers you print a day. So just that little white space, reducing the size of the paper, will do that. I think in this Columbus example, I may be wrong about it, one of the motivations beyond saving money is speed, because they're going to be printing another metro,
Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm. And coincidentally,
another person's another newspaper.
Yeah, another paper from another company.
100 miles away.
100 miles away.
Because you're pros, you tend to talk. In,
yes, I'm sorry.
Rex's first reference to NLRB.
Yes,
there are people who don't know that.
Metro refers to this a large newspaper. And I know a little bit about this because our labor lawyer, when he was helping me negotiate in Kingston, he was also negotiating with the press union out there. And I can't remember which paper, but he had told me a year or so ago that this was coming. And I think that that's all a part of it. But Rex also pointed out the distance between Cincinnati and Columbus is 100 miles in the Midwest. So can you imagine the potential travel nightmare? Potential for upheaval in delivery. And then, of course, you're talking about a wide delivery area.
You're talking about snowstorms.
Snowstorms.
Exactly.
And large, you know, these big papers don't just deliver within their cities.
I'd be really disappointed if I were the editor in Cincinnati, because I'd recognize how much my paper is going to be affected by this, mm-hmm. and not in a good way. They're all going to be smaller papers. They're basically, when you fold the page, it's about the size of an iPad screen.
Really?
So it's like double the size of an iPad when it's open. And see, the thing, what I was describing, cutting the web width, making papers narrower, which has been happening a lot in this country, sure. You can do on an existing press. Mm-hmm. It takes some engineering, but you don't have to build a new press, whereas cutting the length of it does require a new press.
Well, the other thing is, if anybody out there has in their...
If anybody cares about any of this.
No, if anybody out there has in their cellars or and buried away...
Yeah, an old press.
An old newspaper from 50, 60, 70 years ago, and you pull it out and you see how wide those newspapers are. Newspapers began to shrink long before the current economic crisis.
But I have to ask you guys a question, because we've tackled this before. I've often wondered, with everything, with the newspaper industry sort of collapsing a little bit, that
the print business.
Yeah, the print business. Why is the cost of newsprint, the paper you print on, so high? Now, I think
it's cyclical. It's entirely cyclical, much more so than many other commodities. It just goes up and down almost year by year.
Yeah, but it's sort of monopolistic, isn't it? A few people own just the most of it.
Yeah,
so if that's the case, I don't mean to cut you off, Ira. Because,
well, you asked the question, and I thought I would answer it.
Do you have anything to add?
Yes, the answer is that it's supply and demand, and as newsprint has become less in demand because we're printing smaller papers and fewer papers, the newsprint manufacturers are making less newsprint. So
they raise the prices, which is what kills me about what we're doing with our cars. We're saying, okay, cars, you have to make 55 miles an hour in 19 whatever,
miles,
by 20 whatever. Okay,
miles per gallon.
Yeah. I'm so sorry, Rex. You're absolutely right,
you're
and
haughty.
I stand corrected. Very haughty, but right.
Just trying to keep things straight for our listeners here.
But here's the deal: as soon as it's that way, they're going to raise the price on the gas because they control the amount of gas that there is. So we're not going to be saving money on gas. You're going to be paying more because they're going to charge more. I predict that.
Well, there you go. But we're going to be putting less pollutants into the atmosphere.
That's
right?
That's all true.
And perhaps moving to vehicles that don't require gas.
Yeah, that's a good thing. We're building a new press, you know, by the way.
I've been hearing about this for about 5 years.
Yeah, it's going to come online about the end of March. And one of the aspects of this is that ours will change the dimension. We will be an inch narrower on each side, but we're going to cut an inch and 3/4 off the bottom as well, so that it actually feels better to hold it. The new dimension is going to be pretty cool.
And you've tested
that?
Social science?
Yeah, actually, the Washington Post is the size that we're going to be.
I think it sounds like it's the size of my paper now.
Yeah, but it could be.
But
why
not build a press where, depending on the exigencies, you can just push a lever and change the dimensions anytime you want? You can't do that?
Can't do that. No, that engineering has not been created yet. A newspaper press is a heavy, heavy piece of equipment. Yeah. And so we have a variable width folder. We can, on different units of the press, we can print different size. We can print a tabloid or a broadsheet at the same time, but you can't actually change the width of it.
Wasn't it Humphrey Bogart in that wonderful film about the press? What was it?
That's The Press, Baby, Deadline USA. USA.
And the last thing he says, stop the press.
Well, no, no, he said, he's talking to the gangster as the press is running, and he says, what's that sound? He says, that's the press, baby. You can't stop
You know what
that.
We have to do?
All right.
We have to get our producer, Speedy Gustina, right?
Find that clip.
No, to find that clip and every other major clip from newspaper movies like Robert Redford and all the rest of it, put it together, and we'll use them on every show.
No, well, there's
pre-recorded,
there's a
just like
fine
my comments
idea.
Today.
I think you ought to give Speedy a raise if he does that. So that's
Well, I think you ought to give your associate editor, Mike Spain, a raise while we're at it, as long as we're giving out raises.
Absolutely. Let's all be generous here. It's a wonderful time. We appreciate you folks taking the time to join us this week on The Media Project and hope to see you next time around.
Big hope.
Print that story, you're a dead man.
Not just me anymore. You'd have to stop every newspaper in the country now, and you're not big enough for that job.
Don't give me that fancy double talk. Yes or no? Hey, that noise. What's that racket?
That's the press, baby. The press. And there's nothing you can do about it. Nothing.
They used to work.